Kenny Dickinson, ace musician from Atlanta, Georgia, and Young Forever. And Courtney, I think, did very well for her debut on the production. What did you think, Emma?
I think she did really well, yeah. She seemed really upbeat and excited to be on the show, so it's fantastic.
Set the standard in so many ways for our next dynamic duo co-presenters. Who could we possibly actually turn to actually sort of continue the magic after Courtney Dickinson has actually launched us into that music routine? It would have to be...
Is it Shane and Sheila Rimmer?
The legends that are Shane and Sheila Rimmer. Good evening, folks.
Good evening. Good evening to you from sunny London.
Well, is it that sunny? Very sunny?
Well, any time the clouds sort of part for a few minutes, that's sunny.
That counts. Okay.
For us.
That's good.
I wasn't sure Potter's Bar could be classified as London, to be honest, but you
know,
I suppose.
No.
In the great scheme of things, whatever, it's all very important.
Emma, now, did you train Courtney?
Courtney.
I
don't train singer-songwriters. They develop in their own way. You've got to get free range. They're free range. We have a little farm that little free range singer-songwriters will develop.
I thought you did everything, Alex.
I mean, he is great, but, you know, he can't
do
everything.
There are a few omissions along the way, aren't there? Yeah.
Well, yeah. Emma is very excited because next week she will get to meet both you fine people in person.
Yeah,
we've spoken so often.
Yeah, exactly. And she may well be attached to your good self as the official event ambassador. So responsible.
Oh, do her a hat.
Well, yeah, a nice badge. And, and also nice badge. She'll have the opportunity to obviously, you know, ensure you are fully supplied
with
coffee,
yes,
water, all of those kind of things, basically.
How's it going, Alex?
Life or the show or just generally sort of happiness?
Well, you select and tell us which you're enjoying the most.
Well, I think we're enjoying everything because actually we've got a few questions for you fine folk from the wonderful Ross Ironfield, who's over in Salford in Manchester, and he's very keen. He'll also be attending the event, Telefantasy and Society. You can still attend. It's free to attend.
Fantastic.
Yes, but we say it's free. It is free, but obviously there are only a few remaining places, so you need to send that email
in there.
Sort of thing through. Go to shanerimmer.com website, click on the various things there, you'll come back to me, and marvellous. First question for both of you from Ross Ironfield. Are you looking forward to next week? Now, I presume Ross is actually referring there to the event as opposed to just generally, I look forward to every week.
It's a good week.
Exactly.
We are definitely. And this time I've sworn to myself that I'm going to climb up that.
No, don't do it. You're not going to do
Steep
Hill.
No,
we'd have to get Thunderbird 1 on the case.
Maybe get a taxi up there and then go.
Can you get wheels up there? I didn't know. I thought it was all walking.
No.
You have to take a slightly different route, but you can.
Please.
But you get there.
Can
I tell you why I'm looking forward to it?
Yes, Sheila.
First of all, to see you again, Alex. Oh. It was always so nice to see you and to meet Emma. And to come to the University of Lincoln, which I'm sure is splendid, and also because I was born in Lincoln, and I'd really love to get to the cathedral as well.
Wow. Oh, fantastic.
A telefantasy symposium that was designed hundreds of years ago just with the express viewpoint of coinciding with where Sheila Rimmer was born.
Exactly.
God, yes.
That's a great plan. You know, Shane comes over from Canada, I come down from Teesside, Emma comes up from Surrey. It's a whole new world.
It's perfect.
It's going to be absolute magic. Yes.
Exactly. Well, that's great. So the second question is, and this is going to be an interesting one, have you managed to see the new Thunderbirds or Go series? And have you got any thoughts on it?
Well, yes.
We saw the first one. We saw the first one.
Yeah.
Well, why would you get up at 8 o'clock on Saturday morning?
I mean, the time change was an issue.
It's a tricky situation because you've got to leave everything behind that you're sort of experiences in through the original Thunderbirds. And it's different, you know. The fellow who directed it knows what he's up to, but I think it's very difficult to come back on something that's already established, proved a success, and has a popular appeal to it. I just don't know. I mean, that's not backing out, but it's quite different from the original one. The only relic left is David Graham. doing Parker. But, you know, they've got good people in it. I don't like it very much.
May I say something?
Of course you can, yes. Sheila.
Yeah, well, I didn't like it. When the music started and it was Sound of Birds, I thought, well, thank goodness, you know, they've kept something that's it's going to be okay.
Yes.
And I knew it was going to be CGI, and I think I'm fairly forward enough to go into modern technology. And, you know, the rockets and all that, that was fine. It looked good. I didn't like the look of the puppets or whatever they're called. The
synthespians.
CGI.
Synthespians. Yep.
What are they called?
Well, I call them synthespians, as in synthetic thespians.
Okay, fine. Synthespians. Very good word. I didn't like them. They didn't do anything for me. Those sort of rollerball eyes were the only thing that caught my attention, but everything else was static. And I thought the script was awful. There was no plot, no, you know, it was just crash, bang, wallop with a terrible music. After Thunderbirds, it became awful music, which was non-stop in your ears. And I just thought it was, you know, okay, well, if that's what six-year-olds want to watch at 8 o'clock in the morning or something, that's fine.
But it's not six-year-olds, it's for the 60-year-olds amongst us, for goodness sakes, you know, and the 40-year-olds and the 50-year-olds and the 20-year-olds and so on.
Oh.
I can see exactly where you're coming from, Sheila. I will, in defence of the series, I will say that at least it's more true to the spirit than the Jonathan Frakes movie was a few years ago, which had lost the plot completely.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
So, good news from that point of view. Great to hear David Graham back. We need, obviously, the campaign to start where your good self to be back with us as well, Shane, because that's essential.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of the storyline, having watched some of the later 22-minute shows on Saturday mornings, or at least, you know, time-jumping various other bits and pieces, they did a kind of remake of the Fire Flash scenario, and it was lift, port, wing, and all, and I think they were getting it more. They were definitely getting more into the frame of the sequence. So, plus, of course, Sharon Lark was kind enough to give a full extended interview with us, and although she's in Australia and can't make Telefantasy and Society, I thought, let's give a big up to Sharon Lark, because I know she's worked long and hard to try and produce something positive, and admittedly she'd be devastated to hear your words, Sheila, but it's okay. It's okay. You've got to take criticism. After all, how do you think Simon Cowell actually operates?
Yes, exactly.
Who knows? Yes.
Well, I just give you a little quote from a chap from the BBC who sent Shane an email, and he said, all I can say is that in the 60s, 70s and 80s we were all served absolute magic, and you were one of the magicians.
Yeah.
And you can't take that away from anybody. And I thought that was a very nice quote.
I think that's absolutely spot on. That's I mean,
yeah.
That's
Emma, you're reading the book, the autobiography from Thunderbirds
to
Pterodactyls.
I have it right here.
That, exactly, that sums up the whole Shane Romero. That's why you're all pretty much guest of honour, really. I mean, yourself, editor-in-chief of SFX magazine, Richard Edwards, and Jamie Anderson. It's fantastic. Yeah, win-win.
Ah, yeah.
Anyway, moving on, because, of course, you were with Jamie, I believe, up in Scarborough recently. Sadly, I couldn't get up to Scarborough for that particular event, but I take it all went well with the Comic-Con event that you had at Scarborough.
It did, yeah, very good. It was incredibly windy, and that Scarborough Bay, you know, just walking out in that, it's just fantastic. It almost gusts you along the road. It's just wonderful.
Well, Sheila, of course, in the north we like to actually have hardy gusts of wind, because otherwise...
Yeah, well, you've got it, that's for sure.
The next question from Ross, halfway through here, so developing quite nicely here. There has been some discussion, I don't know if you can actually comment on this at all, but there has apparently, according to Ross, been some discussion on the Fanderson Forum, that's an email, the Fanderson Forum, that Shane makes a cameo in the episode relating to Fireflesh. Have you made a cameo in the Thunderbirds Argo series as yet, or is that...
No.
No.
Aww.
Well, we're going to have to...
I know, the rumours fly around all over the place when this sort of situation comes up.
We do know that Sylvia Anderson has made a cameo has recorded a cameo as Lady Penelope's...
grandmother or aunt?
I believe so. I think it's aunt.
Yeah.
I think it's aunt from that point of
view. Oh, really? We haven't seen that yet.
So, you know, clearly, if it's good enough for Sylvia, it's good enough for Shane Rimmer. That's the kind of...
Of course.
And the next really positive thing, something I can echo from this, from Ross's view, because I also treated myself to the Gerry Anderson Lost Classics DVD recently, which has recently been released on DVD. And Ross would like to say that he watched Space Police, loved it. In fact, he agrees with me on this, preferred it to the series.
So there we are.
Yeah, there we are.
Oh, everybody's getting a grand slam, I think.
But Jamie did a good job. job on, or he got somebody else to do a good job on reconstructing that Space Police,
yes,
because it is very old and sort of quite old-fashioned. But he made it look so sharp and nice. I think it looked really good.
In fact, I'm going to get hold of a copy of the DVD and hopefully pass it to Emma tomorrow so she'll have watched it in time for meeting up with you next week.
Fantastic.
Right. Yeah.
Ted Shackelford tried, but he wasn't in your league, is Patrick Brogan. He just wasn't in your league, Shane. You know, it's still... Never mind.
One has to take a back seat and watch this all go on in front of your bleary eyes. But it's an amazing sort of area, this sci-fi, because sci-fi is so technically based. In order to make it sort of, not family entertainment exactly, but in order to have warm, reachable characters in it, it's quite a feat. I think that was the thing so special about the original Thunderbirds, that you had this immense sort of hardware going on all over space, and yet you still had you were drawn to the family, who were all sorts and pieces, and you know, I really, the more I see it, the more impressed I am with the makeup of the thing.
It was an outstanding scene. I mean, we're looking at your website now, ShaneRimmer.com, of course, the 50th anniversary of Thunderbirds Argo. And my word, you're both working hard, because as we see, not only do you have the Wednesday 6th of May gig at Telefantasy and Society Symposium at the University of Lincoln, but then on Saturday the 9th of May, it's Brit Sci-Fi at the National Space Centre in Leicester.
Wow. Yeah.
Followed by the Granite City Comic Con. My word, Sheila, you're going up to Aberdeen?
Yes.
Aberdeen.
Yes. Really looking forward to that. That'll be another windy one.
Well, what a surprise.
That's if we stay on land, yes.
Well, very good. And then, of course, we will hopefully all get together. And this time around, we're definitely looking to connect in Leicester once again for Andacon.
And we're going to Blackpool Comic Con in September. It's a new one.
Do you know, I was speaking with Ed Fortune, who tragically, because he's got an operation, Emma, can't be with us from Starburst magazine. But we are in the process of talking Starburst things, and obviously we love SFX, and Richard Edwards will be there from SFX. Starburst, they're looking to support us
more
fully.
We have to have the best of both worlds.
I think so. Exactly.
And Paddy O'Hare, I think. Do you know him? He's one of the writers on Starburst magazine.
Yes, yeah.
And he's the one who's actually running the Blackpool Comic Con, the first one.
Do you know, we actually met up with Paddy. I took his photograph at the Doncaster Digicon. So, you know, obviously short-term memory beginning to pass away in my inside side of things. But you're absolutely right. Yes, you know. Did you see that? I could have acted as, Paddy O'Hare, of course. Fantastic. Because he was singing the praises of the Blackpool Comic Con. Actually, have you been to Blackpool, Emma?
No, I haven't, actually.
I think that's something else we'll put down on the list of things. Yeah. A way to start off the final third year.
Travelling,
you know,
around the whole of England.
Exactly.
And they're doing it at the Winter Gardens, which was the place in the Variety days. To be at the Winter Gardens in Blackpool was the place to be.
Second only to the London Palladium.
Yeah, it really was.
And even these days, sometimes used as the location for Strictly Come Dancing.
Yeah. Indeed, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So just... And we might get to ride a donkey.
That would be amazing.
You see, this is the kind of quality that money, quite literally, can't buy. The whole sort of sequence, which is one of the reasons why the event on Telefantasy and Society is free. But you can meet Shane Rimmer in person. He might even, if he's very kind, bring along a few books to be signed.
I'd like to see as many people as can make it.
So would we,
there.
Shane.
Yeah. It'd be lovely.
It's what we call an intimate gathering as it stands at present, which is nice.
Well, not too intimate, you know. We don't want echoes going around all over the place.
It'll be splendid. Last two questions for Shane and Sheila Rimmer, please. Emma.
Of course. Have the both of you enjoyed your time on the midweek drive today?
Oh, yes. Always.
Yeah,
very positive.
Very good.
No risk of synthespians there.
No hesitation.
She was saying, well, his eyes are okay, but after that, and music starts off all right, and then she sort of trails off into all sorts of things, you know. And
that's the only time we didn't enjoy it was when we both forgot that we were supposed to be on it. And,
there's always that challenge, of course.
Yeah.
Never mind.
For you, yes.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yes, and will you both be joining us again on the show in the near future?
Well, when you can put up with us again, we'll be back.
I think we can.
It'll be 7 days from now then, basically. Good. But yeah. Having a symposium. Fantastic. Shane and Sheila Rimmer, as ever, we salute you.
And take it back as well.
Jessica Ward and Emma Tinson. We could tell you their superhero aliases, but then they'd have to stop saving the world.
Forces of evil as Jeannie Hopkirk, helped the saint to vanquish villains and danced on the Riviera with Tony Curtis and Roger Moore, being a regular midweek drive correspondent from California is the clear way forward. I'm Annette Andre, and I'd like to congratulate you for choosing this station and podcast.
Always very impressed with the congratulatory lines that come through. In fact, it's just a critical sort of example in terms of telefantasy, in terms of how much wonderfulness there actually is when you can say,
Annette Andre, ace actress and top correspondent, now live on the Midweek Drive with another audio letter from upstate New York.
Of course, there is the final roll call.
Emma Tinson from Surrey. Holly Parker from York. Jessica Ward from the Isle of Man, and Ed Wellman and Sue Royce from Lincoln. An awesome assemblage of midweek drive-et talent. In fact, probably far too much for Lincolnites to cope with on a single show.
Which is one of the reasons, of course, why Emma Tinson is the sole member who's actually of that team
exactly.
who's in the studio. So
exactly.
There we are.
It would be too much to have everyone
too,
in.
Too much of it. We've just been speaking to Shane and Sheila Rim, of course, really a Telefantasy and Society event really would be, we'll still be incomplete without Annette Andre being here, but we sadly, our budget didn't stretch to flying you across the Atlantic to take part in next week's event. But never mind, Annette. How's life in California?
Oh, well, it's very hard. You know, I'm sitting here at the table, looking out at the bright sunshine, the balmy air, listening to a pair of mockingbirds outside. I mean, you know, life's tough.
Just like Lincoln, really. I mean, if you substituted your host to the midweek drive for a pair of mockingbirds, that's it, really.
Yeah,
you've got sunshine weather, Brayford Pool.
A little bit.
Exactly. But as trailed ahead last week by that wonderful co-presenter Arthur Weingarten, ace writer and producer, of course, this week is the week of Annette Andre and the 6 years of the Bear.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Which sounded a bit extraordinary.
Extraordinary. We've barely had a wink of a night's sleep since in thinking about it, Annette.
Anticipation.
But, exactly. Total anticipation. So over to you, my girl. What's it all about?
Here's the story in a nutshell. I've called it Lost in Translation. It's rare that a book comes into my life and unexpectedly is not only a wonderful read, but offers a solution to a problem that I was unaware existed. H is for Hawk is just such a book, and I'll be eternally grateful to its British author, Helen MacDonald, for the illumination. Those of you who have heard me on this show rattling on about animals and the rights we don't allow them to have, or followed me on Facebook, know that I'm batty for all creatures, great and small. H is for Hawk is right up my alley. It chronicles the devastation the author experienced at the sudden loss of her father, and how she decided to fill this void by acquiring and training a young wild goshawk. Those who would dismiss this as just another example of an animal lover's in need to humanize a wild creature, you'd be not only wrong, but denying yourself a unique insight into the ability of an animal from the wild and a human to create an intimate, common dimension. But before we go any further, let me state unequivocally that I can never condone the taking of a wild creature to satisfy a human need, and in the process, invading and altering its nature. Whether it's a zoo or Helen MacDonald, it's wrong and can never be made right. That said, it's the only negative I have to a book so filled with fine writing and deep insights into the human and animal natures. Like Helen MacDonald, I too once had such a relationship. Not with a hawk, but with a female black bear I named Wanda. And therein lies the intersection of how MacDonald's Mabel and my Wanda provided the answer to a question I was unaware needed asking. It's almost a year now since I've moved three cats and a husband from a mountaintop in New York's Hudson Valley to a home in sun-drenched Southern California. Every day as I take in the miles of white sand beaches and temperate climate, I count myself blessed, especially when friends back in New York tell me they've just come through the most brutal winter imaginable. And yet, in the past month or so, I've had a vague but growing feeling that something's not quite right, a bit unbalanced and drifting off course. But on what course was I off, and what balance had I misweighed? My thoughts kept turning to Mabel and Helen MacDonald's attempts to modify the hawk's instinct to hunt and kill prey with a necessary set of commands that would impose order on a creature who is purely a killing machine. The hawk was built for speed, swift and sure as a sniper's bullet. Once Mabel locks onto a target, there's no need for the fat lady to sing. And then, on one of my early walks on the beach, it hit me. The problem that I'd been avoiding, and hard on the heels of this, came the solution. What was missing in this California paradise of mine was wonder, and the indelible bond that had joined this being from the wild to a woman who had spent her life playing by the rules of civilization. I met Wanda while attempting to carve a hillside garden out of what should have been a geologist's playground. The slope was more Ice Age rocks than soil. I was deep in consternation about a particular rock that remained stubbornly embedded no matter how hard I applied the crowbar, when suddenly I was aware of a presence above me. I glanced up, and there, resting on a huge, flat-topped boulder, not 10 feet away, was a black bear, looking down at me with large, liquid brown eyes. Well, if this situation had been in one of the TV scripts in which I played the damsel in distress, I'd have gasped in shock and let out a shriek that would have catapulted Simon Templar to my rescue. But that didn't happen. To my astonishment, I was completely calm. And as our eyes locked, I had the inescapable feeling that, well, as Claude Rains told Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca, this could be the start of a beautiful friendship. And indeed it was just that, a beautiful friendship. For 6 years, I had Wanda in my life. And as Isaac Dinesen wrote in Out of Africa, if I know a song of Africa, what song does Africa sing of me? I'd like to think that Wanda had a song for me. Oh, but before you start rolling your eyes, let me assure you that this was no ordinary hen party. Wanda would suddenly emerge from the woods surrounding the house and take up her place on the huge boulder, whether or not I was working in that part of the garden. She seemed to sense from the very start of this ritual that even if I was nowhere in sight, I'd spot her and take up my position below. Our time together progressed from my making small talk, you know, cooing phrases such as, "Hello, Wanda, what a beautiful girl you are." And she, uttering low grunts at what seemed to me appropriate moments in the conversation, to longer and longer silences, where we just were. Other times, I would relate the doings of my life, daily and intimate. She listened, her head and ears canting now and then as if processing my words. I wasn't under any illusion that Wanda had suddenly become conversant in the English language, but I had the inescapable sense that she and I were on the same wavelength, indefinable and unmeasurable. Let me be clear that Wanda was not my pet, but her own being as I was mine. Where Helen MacDonald, in order to train Mabel to return to her after a hunt, was forced to invade and alter the hawk's instinct and behavior, Wanda and I never interfered with each other's innate character. Not once in our 6 years did I touch her, nor she, like a domesticated cat or dog, show affection, if indeed she possessed such an emotion, by rubbing up against me. Where we met was in a unique space, one in which I had a transforming peace and tranquility. That first year, our meetings went on until October, and then Wanda was gone through the winter, denned up somewhere in the forest. When she reappeared in the spring, she was trailed by 4 black furballs, her babies born over the winter and soon to become a precious part of my daily life. I had become an aunt, and as Wanda proudly displayed her new brood, I listened to their squeals and barks as Wanda answered with what sounded to me as a new and quite complicated language of grunts and rumbles, obviously directed toward their discipline and survival. Of course, her dialogue was also accompanied now and then by cuffs of her huge paws that would send the cubs sprawling whenever reason didn't prevail. Well, tell me that all mothers don't have the same problem. Listening to Wanda and the cubs exchanging their vocal gives and takes, it struck me that the sounds they were making weren't all that different from the harmonies and tempos of the 60s doo-wop music. And so, in a madcap moment, I named this woodland version of the Jersey Boys Wanda and the Gumdrops. So over the next year and a half, I watched Wanda train her gumdrops into self-sufficient youngsters, devoting the endless hours it takes to give them, like our human children, the skills and self-confidence needed to keep them out of harm's way in a world filled with waiting pitfalls. During this time, an extraordinary event took place, one that indelibly proved that Wanda considered me, well, valuable to her. Every now and then, Wanda and the cubs would be accompanied by another female who looked to be about Wanda's age. From her take-charge attitude with the cubs, I came to realize that she was most likely Wanda's sister. And so, in keeping with Wanda's musical heritage, I named her Peggy Sue. From her first appearance, Peggy Sue seemed to accept me only because of Wanda's confidence in me. However, she maintained a wary distance, and yet, in dozens of meetings, she never evidenced any aggression toward me, until she did. One day, as I walked toward where Wanda and the now adolescent cubs were basking in the sun, Peggy Sue suddenly let out a menacing low growl and slowly moved toward me. Her fur bristled in anger. Before she got any closer, Wanda quickly came to her feet and ran toward us. With a series of sharp grunts, she placed her body sideways between Peggy Sue and me, her eyes riveted on her sister. Peggy Sue halted, hesitated only momentarily, and then quickly moved off into the woods. There could be no mistaking what Wanda had done, and no further comment is necessary. At the end of our 6th year together, Wanda disappeared from my life. I have no idea why or what brought about my loss of a dear friend. Speculation brings no solace. But she was a deep presence in my life on the mountaintop, a once-in-a-lifetime experience that I know will never be repeated. What came to me that day on the beach when I realized that what was absent in my new life in California was not the physical presence of Wanda, but the fact that I have no other such friend here and never will. Wanda will be in my heart forever, but what I had for those precious 6 years in the Hudson Valley, I now realize cannot and should not be replaced here on the edge of the Pacific Ocean. So what have I come away with from this unlikely bonding? Have I a newfound wisdom into both the animal and human condition? If so, it has so far eluded me. Perhaps whatever, if anything, will become usable in my life needs time to percolate. But for now, I'm content to find the question far more intriguing than an answer. In this new life, I have the certainty that Wanda is very much a part of this fresh beginning, no less real than when she and I had our long days together on that hillside garden as many years ago. That's it.
I'm almost in tears here, Annette.
So emotional.
It's like... And we have to ask the question, because we're looking at the website, the Facebook scenario. Is the bear that we see at your house there, going up and down the stairs, is that Wanda the bear?
No, that's actually not her. That happened to be one much later on.
That bear just turned
up,
say.
Around, but she was exploring the thing. She may well have been one of Wanda's cubs, because they remember things. But no, what I'm going to do is post, I've got three or four pictures, I'm going to post them on my Facebook page in the next couple of days, and you'll see Wanda. Yeah.
Well, I think it's really lovely, like, heartwarming story. It's very emotional, and I think a lot of people do find it easy to sort of connect with animals. I don't know what it is, you know, obviously whether it's a pet or a wild animal, people do create these emotional bonds, and I think it's really nice.
And of course,
well, you do, and this was unexpected, because really and truly the move came from her. The initial move came from her, not from me. She was the one who came up and stayed. And we never, both Arthur and I mean, she accepted both of us, and we never crossed those boundaries. You know, there are limits, that, particularly with wild animals, that she never, as I said, rubbed against me, and gosh knows there were plenty of times when she was near enough, or did I or Arthur stretch out and touch her, and it was very tempting, but didn't do that.
Annette, as I said to Arthur last week, interspecies relationships rarely end happily. I mean, I know there's Beauty and the Beast, but that's a different example at Clyde, and there are frogs and so on. But
well,
still.
To me, it was happy. She disappeared probably to find another territory. Maybe another female came in and took over. Who knows? I don't speculate. You know, it's the wild. Anything could happen. But she left me with such an incredible experience and feeling, you know. I will never forget it. It was a unique experience, and one that very few people have.
This is why ACE director Ilana Rain has just actually put on her Facebook page, she likes to think of this show as a spa for the mind.
Yes.
A spa for the mind.
Oh, how nice. That's lovely.
That's wonderful. Good phrase.
In fact, we're West Coast for the remaining part of the programme, because in a few moments, Ilana Rain, then after that, we'll be over
yes,
with
Phil. Yes, indeed.
It's fantastic. I still like Wanda and the Gumdrops. I think there's a series to be made out of that. And
I think
you should set Arthur at work straight away to actually start, you know, developing some scripts. Wanda and the Gumdrops, the tale of an
Wanda
average
and
bear.
The Gumdrops, yes.
Exactly. Yogi's
I can't set him to work.
Yogi
He's
Boo Boo.
Well,
we thought so.
Come out of
yes, yeah. I mean, think that's definitely the case. You know, if Yogi and Boo Boo have had it for far too long, so you know, Wanda obviously much smarter
yes,
than the average bear. So that's great. Fantastic. Emma, last two questions for Annette Andre, please.
Of course. Annette, have you enjoyed your time on the Midweek Drive today?
Oh, yes. I always do. It's nice to be back, sort of doing it
exactly.
again.
Exactly. Yes, the monthly packages have been revitalised.
Exactly.
And we're glad, actually, we managed to sort of check out that the view from your house was actually taken in New York on the Facebook page.
Yes.
Because otherwise I would have been very confused, thinking, what's happened to the climate in California with all those trees and their gold and stuff, etc.? Very strange.
And, of course, the last question, Annette, is will you be joining us again on the show again in the future?
If the invitation's there, I certainly will.
Of course it's
end of
there.
May, Annette, you'll be back with us, as of course with Arthur as well. I was umming and ahhing with respect to seven little girls sitting in the back seat, a little bit of doo-wop, but in the end I think there's only one, well, given the absence of bears, etc., but given the interspecies relationship, it's Pete Shelley, Love Me, Love My Dog. Happy trails, Annette Andre.
Thank you.
There's a dusty road heading to a highway. Californians feel of my dog, if you can't understand, then I guess we'll have to move on out of plan.
Dealer breaker, you might well say. A dealer breaker. Well, Dean Haglund might say that with respect to his Doberman. His pinches. I don't quite know whether Dean Haglund's latest attempt to actually do a Doberman cartoon strip is going to sort of survive his journey to Australia. But, you know, I'm really honest. I mean, Phil really, really in, I should actually ask what's happening to the Doberman. And somebody who's actually met Dean Haglund's Doberman in person and survived to tell the tale, it has to be said, it's our next legendary guest who actually said on the wonderful Facebook manifesto thing that this radio show is like a spa for the mind.
Which is a fantastic phrase.
Not
course.
A corner shop that some part of the country. No, a spa for the mind. Very good. Ilana Rain, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
Oh, hi, Alex. Thank you so much for having me again. I'm doing great.
Excellent. And hopefully you managed to find out a way to listen online, because I think you had one of those slight hiccups in terms of how you could use the Listen Live function, but you sorted that through now, so you managed to catch hopefully part of Annette Andre's Tale of the Bear.
I caught a tiny bit. Yeah, the links weren't cutting and pasting into Facebook. It was a Facebook issue, not a Siren FM issue. Just like
Well, we like to feel that, you know, Mark Zuckerberg follows where we actually set the path, really.
Yes.
That's the important thing. All we need is the percentage cut, and all will be well. At least the good thing is, Ilana, you knew this week we were calling you. It wasn't a surprise out of the blue call. And all's great, you know, as scheduled, April 29th. So I take it you're in full force. And as we look at the time here, which is 90 minutes past six in England, over in the States it'll be, or indeed in California, it'll be 19 minutes and 12 seconds past 10 a.m. in the morning.
That's right, yes, yeah. And I'm fully caffeinated and ready to go this time. But look, you can surprise me any time. If you're willing to accept the possible fallout from that.
Possible fallout? Whoa.
Oh, dear, we can't have that.
Exactly. Especially as next week we'll have Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore, both of whom were singularly impressed with Ilana Rain and thought she was a wonderful person because, of course, she directed the We Are Not Cylons movie. And they, of course, wrote the wonderful, fantastic text on Battlestar Galactica Volumes 1 and 2. So, and I think Ilana had even put them in touch with somebody, Richard Hatch, I think, who gave her a dedication, because she's just a wonderful person. Ilana, it all helps in every sense of the word. So where would you like to take us? Or should we talk, as Valina sort of uttered last week, about your tendency to micro-scrutinise your characters in your acting class? I don't know. I've got nothing to do with that at all, but, you know, this kind of constant questioning about what is my motivation? I know where you're coming from. I do it every week before the show, but what is it? You know, we can go that way or somewhere else if you wish, Ilana. The floor is yours.
Oh, thank you. Well, I definitely would like to talk about that at some point, probably flow into this. Well, as you know, my co-writer and I, Brian Smith, are in deep, heavy, productive mode with our screenplays, and I'm thrilled to say I'm finally back into revision with my beloved trilogy, so sci-fi trilogy. And, you know, working with someone is a singular experience, different than working alone, but, you know, to gear up to writing, I have to fall into a certain frame of mind. And over the past couple of years, I've been thinking, like, well, what gets me into this mindset? For me, it's music, preferably music with minimal words. And lately, I've been listening to this British songwriter, musician named Spangl. He's from the UK. And
can I just hold you there momentarily, Ilana? Because I'm sure you actually said Spangl. Could you spell that out? I mean, we're having obviously another Cameron Tilbury moment here, where clearly Sim Bulkey was the chap that he was actually trying to get, and we finally managed to. So Schwangel, could you just spell it out for us, please?
Sure, it's Schwangle, and his real name is Simon Possford, but he goes by Schwangel, and it's electronic music, mostly, I guess you could say that. And for me, you know, listening to his music and listening to certain types of music, I need to listen to a song over and over again if it's going to take me somewhere. I find that I look at my play counts and I say, oh, wow, I've listened to this song, you know, 33 times, or wow, I've listened to this song on repeat 152 times. And these numbers mean something personally to me. You know, we put meaning into whatever we want to bring it more to the surface. And, you know, that just got me thinking. I know some people can't bear to listen to things on repeat and, you know, they like variety. But for me, when I listen to a song on repeat in order to gear up for writing, I find that it triggers something in my mind. It opens a door to perception, and it opens like a gateway to a fictional reality that I'm trying to create. And so I find that to be really useful. And then that got me thinking about, you know, how people listen to songs on the radio and they can get an earworm, they can get a song stuck in their head. And it just, you know, I just think that there's something to that, because if we go back to Battlestar Galactica, where Six talks to Gaius and says, you know, life is a series of notes. It's a harmony. It's what defines our existence and shows us our purpose. That's not the exact quote, but that's more the essence, the meaning. I just think about how music, for me, has played such a critical role in my art, my visual art. And the last thing I want to just bring this sort of loops around, it made me think of this on September 12th, 2001, the day after the Twin Towers went down. Friend of mine, we were all pretty freaked out, you know, understatement. And he said, well, look, I know this jazz trio that's going to be playing down at this loft, and they have this schedule, and, you know, they're still going to go on. So we went down on September 12th, and, you know, the city was just a wreck and devastated, and we were the only people in the audience, and there were these three guys playing music, and they played for 20 minutes, and there was a connection there that was so profound and so deep, even though there were just two of us in the audience. And we stood up and clapped, and it said, you know, thank you. Thank you for bringing this music into our reality, into this consciousness, into this confusion and misery and suffering. And they stood up and said, wow, we touched someone. Thank you. And it was just five people. It wasn't a crowd. It wasn't, you know, a benefit to save people with, you know, a million viewers. It was five people, give and take. And it was just a beautiful thing. So that's what was on my mind this morning as I listened to Schwangel on repeat over and over and over again to gear up for my work day.
I feel as though we should lay the challenge down for you to actually book this man to actually join us on the show, if only for the name Schwangel or Schwangel?
Schwangel. Well, he's over where you are. You can probably throw a stone in his house.
Schwangel with an S-H-W-O-N-G-L-E.
No, I'll spell it out for you later.
Send me an email. We'll get ourselves sorted through on that basis. We'll face it. You know, I mean, it's not as though we can actually say the Midweek Drive this week has been brought to you by the letters S, C, and H. It's very confusing, you know.
I'll send you a link. You'll like him. Get him on the show. It'd be great.
I think we'll use that if we can go for the line with Courtney Dickinson early in the production.
Yeah.
Then
well, we'll have to now. After
clearly,
you've picked him up so much.
Exactly.
So
it's fantastic.
And then yes, I've had a lot of fill in my life lately, and that acting class is over, And I'm really glad I took it.
Was he okay as a teacher? Just between us? I mean, obviously.
Oh, he's fantastic.
Yeah, good. Because he was a little bit uncertain.
He's fantastic.
As he said, he likes to keep the edge going. If you check out this week's Chill Pack Hollywood, it kind of reflects on the process of the whole teaching aspect and you know, how you should really kind of avoid getting bogged down in the whole thing, and you need to have a freshness, so you're kind of discovering something. And actually, there's even a quote from Dean Haglund, of course, co-hosts of the Chill Pack Hollywood thing. They talk about sensei and the sort of the Japanese notion. It's just a step ahead from that point.
Well, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, I mean, what I got most from it is just about present awareness. And yes, I realized I was judging the whole process, and I took the class in order to help me as a filmmaker and as a director to just get in front of the camera, get in front of the audience again now and then. I think that's really important for people who stand behind the camera to get in front of it and put themselves out there. And you know, I feel like I did manage to break through a barrier when I began to connect certain things about just being absolutely present in a character without judgment and to be in the moment. And that actually is something I do every day. I try to, you know, I'm constantly bringing myself back to the moment, back to the moment. Don't obsess about what happened in the past, something dumb you might have done, or, well, there's a judgment, you know, or, you know, worrying, obsessing about the future, because most of what we obsess about in the future is just not going to come true. What we did in the past is done, so let's just be in the moment and present, and I believe that can truly help acting, any creative endeavor, just, you know, getting through your day. So,
and that
it's
way,
all connected, Alex. It's all connected.
That's the essential. It has been ever since the Big Bang launched us into where we are now, which is quite astounding. Emma, I feel as though I've been spiritually cleansed yet again, but then I often feel that after. I mean, some people say Ilana and Annette. Surely not on the same show.
I know. It's like a double whammy.
Sensational. But would you like to bowl those last two questions to the fabulous Ilana Rain, please?
Of course. Ilana, have you enjoyed your time on the Midweek Drive today?
Oh, absolutely. I love talking to you guys. And hi to everyone driving. Drive safe and hug your loved ones.
But not while you're driving. Otherwise, good. Exactly.
Okay, well, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, precisely. We don't want to go there, at least not as it approaches 6:30 on a Wednesday evening.
No.
Or indeed 10:30.
It's a family show.
Exactly. Precisely. I'm going to give you a choice before Emma turns up with the last two things, because this is obviously going to build up to the Leonis Meister in a few moments. We can offer you either Peter, Paul and Mary with Puff the Magic Dragon.
Ooh.
Or the theme from the... it will be Puff the Magic Dragon. I was going to say... We did have Avengers Age of Ultron actually sort of lined up for
Is
us, but that seems to have actually gone, you know, it's vanished. I mean, we could give you the original Avengers, which is the Emma Peel sort of line. Yeah. I mean, there's that. But then she might not choose it.
I love that. Yeah. No, that's cool. But what about Drag the Magic Puffin? Do you have that?
Again, family show. We have to hold fire on this, otherwise who knows where we'll be going from the whole sort of system. But still, I don't know. I mean, it's quite a poignant thing. And after all, we've had dogs, we've had bears.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously there's a line that Fuzz Aldrin might be commenting on in a few
exactly.
moments. So we can't have a skiddy parade. So, I mean, you know, tempting though it was to actually go... We decided actually. So next question for Ilana, please.
Yes, of course, Ilana. Will you be joining us again on the show anytime soon?
Happily. Love to.
Good.
Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Little Jackie Paper loved that rascal Puff and brought him strings and sealing wax and other fancy stuff. Oh,